Welcome back to Sermon Notes. This is Garland. I've got Clark in here this week, as Clark will be working with this next part of the Acts narrative as we continue this year-long journey through the book of Acts. And so we'll be in Acts chapter 20, verses 1 through 12. And just to remind everybody where we're at, we're in Paul's what we call the third missionary journey. So his third kind of big trip through what we now call sort of Turkey and Greece. And so he's moving again. So we're going to get a lot of place names. If you read this out loud in your community group, you're going to get several cities that'll be hard to pronounce. And so you can laugh at each other as you butcher the names of these places and these people. But tell us what happens in this section. And anything that that we need for small group or things that'll be left out from our time on Sunday.
Yes, Garland. I think one thing to note is 53 to 57 is kind of the window of this third journey, and we're on the very back end of that. This is like
AD.
And so we're in the winter months when we get into this scene. He's just left Ephesus. He's trying to make it to Jerusalem by Pentecost, which would be the spring. And so he's on the back end. This would be his last journey of this nature. Some would consider the fourth journey being when he makes his way from Jerusalem to Rome, which is he's been trying to get to anyway. But anyway, that's where we're at from a timeline standpoint. We're on the back end of that trip. And so part of what's happening big picture here is as he makes his way back for a variety of reasons, he bounces around in some of these cities that he's already been in. And so here in our story today, he'll revisit places like Philippi, Corinth. He's got a group of men with him that are carrying gifts and money. They're trying to get to Jerusalem to help the church there. But they represent churches from some of the churches that he's planted. And so he's not alone. And anyway, so he makes his way back here. And then we end in the scene here in our passage. He's in a place called Troas, and he's having that up all night moment with his friends, and he's encouraging, teaching, preaching, and it ends really interesting. And so that's kind of big picture what's happening in our story.
So yeah. Obviously we'll talk about the story, what happens on Sunday. This is the somewhat, you know, in reading it, it's almost humorous. You have this guy that falls out of the window, and Paul's when they're just hanging out and talking, it seemingly Paul was going on an extended diatribe of sorts, and this guy fell asleep and fell out of the window. So that'll be the passage if you are familiar with. That's what we're going to be looking at on Sunday. So and just again to remind people, he's. If you can picture basically just the Aegean Sea, he's leaving Ephesus, which is on the eastern side of the Aegean. That's in what we call Turkey. He sails basically to the northern end of the Aegean Sea. That's where Philippi is. He works his way down the western side of what we now call Greece. And then he goes back up and kind of circles back around.
So there's a crossover between Asia and Europe as we know them today.
So you can picture it on a map. And again, as you go through these places and names, it's like, okay, it's hard for us to understand and picture when you just read it. So that's where those maps in the back of your Bible can be really helpful. You just kind of go back there and check, and you can see, and then you'll see some of these are places that we've already visited. So Philippi is a place we've already visited, and Thessalonica, he picks up people from there, probably doesn't go into Thessalonica. But again, notice he's got a team. Paul's got people with him. We're gonna continue to note that as we move forward, he's always surrounded by people. And then we get the really interesting story of the kid falling asleep. So what by way of just helpful for a small group leader or things that you go, man, that's interesting, but I just don't have time.
Yeah, I think this isn't the first time this has popped up, but in verse 6, it says, we sailed. There's an introduction here in verse 6 that we haven't had since chapter 16, probably, where Luke, the narrator, is now inserting himself back into the story. And so I think a good question for consideration would be, why is he back in the story? Is he with them? And it's Paul plus these seven, and now Luke too. So there's nine of them total. And where's Luke been? Where's the city that he primarily stays in himself? But he's traveling with them now. And so, Garland, I've wondered, related to Luke, you know, why does he reinsert himself? And Is there anything, you know, and this is just conjecture, you know, is part of Luke's friendship with Paul a service to him to help him physically?
Mm-hmm.
And he's using, if he's a doctor, if Paul likes having him along to kind of help him out along the way and help him navigate some of his challenges that maybe he's had. He's had a pretty hard life these last 13 years of traveling. And so if you want to speak to some of that, you can, Garland, but it's interesting because we move from him being a narrator back to being we kind mm-hmm. of in the story.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it reflects what most, you know, many scholars think that the we sections do reflect a firsthand account at this point of Luke saying, I was there, I'm in this part of the story. And so you can actually watch when that switches, and some think there's other rhetorical devices going on. But I think it's probably most likely that, like, Luke was going, and this is when I joined the trip again. And so to your point, again, it would be entirely conjecture, but this is where, and I feel like I say a lot on this podcast, like to draft up like the Netflix documentary of these things, you know, it'd be really interesting to start putting flesh on these little teams and what were they like and what's Luke like and what does Paul need and what's he like to hang out? And, you know, a lot of times these are several day journeys on the tops of cargo ships, and they're just out there in the elements. And what are they talking about? Like, what are they doing? Is one of them more funny? Is one of them more serious? Or is one an extrovert, an introvert? Like, that's the kind of thing I can't wait to find out one day when we meet these people and their names and get to kind of sense their personalities. But you'd have to take some creative license. But again, to put the flesh back on this, I think that's one of the things we try to do a lot on this podcast, at least, especially in Acts. Like, the story of the kid falling asleep, we talked about in our meeting. Notice it. They're just conversing. They're just hanging out. Like, he's with his friends. Yeah, they have a meal. And they just hang out. And we I think get on to Paul, because after the kid is brought back to life, then he goes on a long rant. But before that, actually, it doesn't say he was teaching. He just says they were just talking. They're just hanging out. And like, we even in our meeting when we were talking about this several weeks ago, just the humanity of, like, when you get with your friends, especially maybe friends that you either haven't seen in a while or that are really dear to you, that's exactly what you do. You sit around a campfire, or you sit in the living room, you sit on a back deck and just end up talking way into the night. And sometimes one of them falls asleep. So, I mean, it's just such a human story.
I think I've done that at your house.
Garland. I know you have. Yes. We've had to rouse you back awake.
For those listeners there, Garland used to, and Sarah used to live across the street from us, and I would go over there and take food.
Daily.
And often, often I would go over there late at night to get some chips and salsa.
Yeah, daily.
And then we would talk about deep things, some fun things. And, but those are some great memories. And so I think we all have friends that we stay up late with. And a lot of times those are really formative conversations. And so you have some of that going on here in the passage. They're eating, they're staying up late, they're conversing. My guess is Paul's about to leave the next morning. Is that he's just trying to get all the time he can with these folks because he knows he's likely not going to see them again.
Mm-hmm.
And so, hey, Garland, I want to ask you, we're going to get into the story of Eutychus briefly, but real quick, why do you think Paul, it says in verse 6, that he's still practicing some of these Jewish festivals, and he himself is engaging in those practices? And there are two thoughts that came to my mind, Garland. One, he's, as someone who's also still trying, even though he's going after the Gentiles, he's respectful of the Jews that are in those cities. He is one. And so, is he modeling for them? Or I wonder if Paul, spiritually speaking, understands the meaning behind them and how Jesus is the bread in this case.
Mm-hmm.
And if it's a really reflective spiritual experience for him that's no longer rote as it once was,
mm-hmm.
Speak to that. Why do you think Paul is still practicing?
Yeah, I think we have a misnomer when we think about you know, what happens with Paul, what happens with the disciples. We think, oh, there's a new religion called Christianity, and Paul converts, quote unquote, from Judaism to Christianity, and he's left all that bad law, you know, stuff behind. That was all empty and legalism. Mm-hmm. Everything I just said for the last 20 seconds, all of that is a caricature and kind of a really a bad caricature, I think, of how Paul thinks of Judaism. You can see this across his letters, what Jesus thought of Judaism. Paul is still a Jew. And for him, these are things that are really significant to him. These are really important to him. They mark him as a part of his people, and they help tell the story that he finds himself in of the redemptive power of his God. And so I think we do Paul a disservice, and it makes it really hard to understand what Paul does and says. We're going to get this in chapter 21. He's going to go up to the temple and perform a purification vow. He's still very Jewish. And when we read his letters, I think sometimes we can bring this caricature back in and assume that, well, that's the law of the Old Testament was just all bad and Paul couldn't wait to get rid of it. And that's really just an unfortunate misreading of Paul.
Well, and I think for him, Garland, too, I mean, if you consider the Exodus event, everything around the giving of the law, the purpose, the picture, the temple imagery, the tabernacle story, all those things are no longer in black and white. They're in color for Paul. And everything that Jesus is has become as the fulfillment of all things law. It's not that they were done away with in the sense of they don't matter. They're more fully alive than ever. And so for Paul, he's experiencing a more robust just picture of Judaism, if you will, coming alive.
Yeah, and I think we can almost, we can overstate it and say, well, Paul is just doing these, you know, he does these things just for missional purposes. You know, he wants to be to the Jews a Jew, to the Greek a Greek. And while that's certainly true, Paul knows that this is not what marks him now, you know, observing, say, the Passover, the Feast of Unleavened Bread. And he'll say very clearly, what marks a person as in God's family is loyalty, faith to Jesus now. And that's the significant change. Now, that's a very Jewish story. That's why we always say the gospel is the announcement that Jesus is Israel's Messiah. Well, it's all very Jewish and also the world's true king. And so I think for Paul, I think we can overstate it and say it's just missional. You know, he's kind of doing it for missional purposes. I think it's really sincere. I think, and to your point, I think for Paul to remember the Passover and celebrate the Feast of Unleavened Bread in the face of now Jesus, I bet that was amazing. And we've got some community groups, even I've done it in some groups I've led. I got a picture on Passover this year from one of our community groups in Springdale, and they did a full Seder, Jewish Seder Passover meal with the herbs and the plates and the readings. And it was an incredibly rich experience for them. And of course, seeing how all that symbolism pointed to ultimately to Jesus, it was really cool. And that's from a bunch of Gentiles in Springdale, of all places. Now, for Paul, these are significant things that are still very much a part of his, not just his story, but his practice. And so, again, we want to make sure and do the best we can to understand what's happening and what's going on. And so for Paul to still be celebrating Passover and to want to get to Jerusalem for the festival of Pentecost, well, yeah, that's still really important to him. This is a part of his story and a part of what makes him him. He just knows now going to celebrate Passover, it doesn't ultimately define his inclusion. That defines it.
There's been a final Passover that has happened.
And so reread the letters of Paul, Romans, Galatians, with more of that lens. And I think it's a lot more nuanced than often we can portray it, especially in, you know, Protestant evangelical circles. I think we can often portray you know, Paul and Judaism really through the wrong lens. And so we've made that point several times on this podcast, and we'll do it again in 2 weeks when we see him back in Jerusalem taking vows in the temple. So,
Hey, let's jump to Eutychus here, because I know it's an interesting scene. And again, Luke, when we gathered together to break bread, Luke is present. One of the questions I've been asking is, why would he include this story? I think one consideration, Garland, this is actually the last miracle, this type of miracle that's documented in the Acts narrative. And Paul is in a long line. It's a short list, but it's a line of these types of miracles, whether it be Jesus with Jairus' daughter, the widow's son, Lazarus, Peter and Dorcas, and here, him with Eutychus, of this resurrection miracle. And again, miracles were used by Jesus and in the New Testament to authenticate the message and the work of Jesus. And God was using these supernatural things to point people back to Jesus, the one who is, you know, ultimate. And so you have that happening here. And so I've wondered, you know, just as he's about to leave them the next day, God is working in sovereign. Paul reacts in the moment. He goes, he lays on top of him, raises him up, and he's taken up, as dead is the way some versions use it, but he's raised up to life, and the people are comforted. I just wonder if there's just a gospel affirmation that God is still doing supernatural work, and he's pointing everything back to Jesus. And they would have known, some, the Jews that would have been specifically in the presence of the room, they would have known some of those, maybe even back to Elijah and Elisha, and those resurrection scenes in the Old Testament in 1 and 2 Kings. And so so you have that going on here. But his name, I don't know. I've seen different versions of this, Garland. Lucky one, lucky.
You,
fortunate.
Yeah, you, the EU is the way to say like good. So you've and galeon is good announcement, good news. That's where gospel, we get the word gospel. So you, that's the little word for good, basically.
But it's interesting. Luke takes special attention to use these phrases and terms. Paul kept on talking. he talked longer. And then he teases the scene out. He sank into a deep sleep. He was overcome by sleep. The lamps were dimly lit.
the detail.
The detail's amazing for him to kind of take us into this. And so you can see how someone could get there, especially a young man, maybe some think that he's, you know, maybe as old as 18, as young as maybe 10. Some of our commentaries that we were joking about the other day use the word lad. You know,
I love a great old school translation. Yeah, you in the lad,
channel your best English accent there. But a young man, and you can imagine a teenage kid staying up all night with maybe these adults in the room, and Paul just won't stop talking. Uh-huh. And it's like, enough already. And he just dozes off. He goes up to the window to get some air. Next thing you know, he's out backwards on it.
Yep.
And so anyway, it's just an interesting scene. God gets honor through miracle. Jesus is celebrated. They're comforted. Miracles always bring comfort to those in and around the families, all as startling and as it might be. And you see that here as well. So even though the story is unique, the pattern is similar to Acts and into the miracles of Jesus when he would do these things. Those miracles were always set up to bring comfort, but also to point them to the person behind the miracle, not the miracle itself. Mm-hmm. And so, any other thoughts on Eutychus here, Garland?
Yeah, I would just simply add, and you mentioned it in passing, Jesus does that. He does certain things that are exactly reminiscent of the prophets in the Old Testament. And so, it's one of the ways of signaling, this is the same kind of story here, it's one way of signaling, you know, you call it a long line. We are part of the long line of God's sending prophets to his people to bring you know, God's good order and blessing to the land. And so for Jesus to walk around doing the kinds of things he does exactly like Elisha and Elijah did, well, that's really powerful. And so here comes Paul doing the exact same thing. And again, Peter will do very similar things. So it's one way for the author of Acts, Luke, to signal like, look, this is there's a long tradition of God using God's people, his favored prophets, to bring God's blessing. And hey, we're getting the same thing here. So, yeah, you could see the story get, you know, just the interesting details of the story are there, of course, and it can almost distract from Luke is really signaling to an Old Testament type, we might say, mm-hmm. that Jesus steps into. And so, yeah, I think that's helpful to point out as well, as you did.
Hey, Garland. Before we finish, something to consider for our listeners, for those that are leading or still in small groups as we get into the summer. One of the things that's happening here is there's a transition about to happen. Next week, we're going to get into this, a real tender goodbye to the Ephesian elders. And then there's going to be this shift to Jerusalem, and then he's going to make his way to Rome. But part of what's been happening, Garland, since that first journey, what do you think, AD 45-ish?
Yeah, 46? late 40s. 46, 47.
So these last 10 to 12 years, there's been this gospel movement working in and through the synagogues, but going into these dark Gentile pagan places. And all over the known Roman world, these pop-up small communities of people with Jesus resurrected in their hearts, they've been coming alive. And now he's revisiting many of those on the way back here. He's part of something that's bigger than him now. And while he was part of the instigator, if you will, of this movement, and the Spirit began to regenerate people all over these cities, he's played his small part, but now it's taken on a life of its own. And so the question I would ask our groups to consider and in discussion would be, have you ever been part of a movement, something that was bigger than you, a movement of the gospel, maybe on a campus, as part of a church, maybe something unique in your small group experience? I don't know, Garland, you go back
neighborhood
to your neighborhood, but something. I know for many of our listeners, you've been part of teams, and maybe it was a special season. And you look back and you go, wow, that was unique. That group of people, that coach, those teammates, that group of seniors, that goal we were after, we made it to the finals, but we didn't win, but it was something special. It was bigger than me.
I didn't have that experience. We weren't even near the finals.
I think those that are part of entrepreneurship teams, startups, they can tell those kind of stories. They were like, man, this thing's bigger than us. It's an idea that comes to fruition, and you play a part, but it's got a life of its own. I feel like that's what's happening here. And I just wanted to invite those that are listening into our gospel moment. In our time and place, Garland, you and I are part of this generational legacy of faithful men and women that entrusted to us Fellowship Fayetteville. And Michael and the rest of our team here. And it was birthed in a home of seven families. They probably didn't know this is where it was going.
They certainly would have not predicted that it would be entrusted to people like you or myself, especially.
and us doing a podcast together.
Yeah, they didn't see this in the future.
But it took on a life of its own. And for these last 42 years or so, God has given us Fellowship Rogers, Fellowship Bentonville, Fellowship Fayetteville, Mosaic. He's birthed a Celebrate Recovery ministry out of that. Brooklyn has now been launched. We have land in Prairie Grove and Springdale. I was in a breakfast this morning, Garland, talking with a fellow pastor in Fayetteville, and we were connecting the dots of a lot of Fayetteville and Fellowship people who have gone on to be a part of local church plants over the last 20 years. And so it's a movement that's bigger than us. And for those of you listening, I want to invite you in to this movement of the gospel and invite you into something, to be a part of something bigger than yourself. It's really something fun to be alive in this at this time and place. It's not easy, but this thing is so much bigger than you and me, Garland. And we have to be faithful to play our part and to steward it as God wants us to. But it's really fun to be a part of this.
Yeah, and if you just go read Paul's letters, you'll see oftentimes it's really messy and you're just figuring stuff out. And I feel like that's a lot of what happens here as well.
And it's about to get messy for him.
Oh, yeah.
The movement is going to take him back to Jerusalem, and it's actually going to get worse.
Yep.
For him.
For him.
But the outcome will be his intended goal. But before you know it, by the end of the our narrative here, he's going to be before kings, literally.
And we're still talking about it 2,000 years later.
That's right. So,
pretty cool.
Yeah, it's really cool.
Yeah, pretty cool. Yeah. This is, you got lucky. Michael got all of chapter 19, 2.5 years. You got 12 verses in an evening.
I got three months and then 7 days in Troas.
Yeah, so don't screw it up. All right, we'll see you on Sunday morning.